there are a lot of information in the data. And most often when you see and look at something which is huge, high volume, and the scale is not something that's interpretable easily by human, it is really important to digest those data and make sense of it.
Hey, and welcome to the What the Tech podcast. My name is Christopher, and in this episode, Kelsey and I talked to Farhad Malecki. We had a great discussion about his work with artificial intelligence and machine learning, as well as his application of these technologies to biomedical data. All right, let's see what the tech is going on.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming, Farhad. It's really nice to meet you today. So I guess my first question will be, I saw that you started with a bachelor's in applied mathematics and then ended up doing your master's and PhD in computer science. Could you tell us maybe a little bit about how you went from math to computer science?
Yeah, definitely. During my high school, I was really a fan of math classes. I enjoyed problem solving, and that was something it was my hobby, to be honest. I remember there was a series of really short books, focusing on one specific topic in math, and they were under different topic for high school math, but more extended to university level math. And that was my hobby. Always I tried to, you know, go grab another one and try to focus it, solve the problem. I remember this hobby ended up making me really strong in math. During my first year and second year, I really didn't see that much of more challenge compared to those, you know, hobby books that I enjoyed during my high school. So first year university degree was completely covered as a hobby. So I really enjoyed the math in general. But down the road, I had a really desire to create something new. That wasn't really easy to do in math, more specifically as on first year, second year undergrad students. During that time, I had a chance to really meet algorithm and computer science in a different way, not computer as a something that as a tool that you use, but something that you can design, you can create with. And the feeling that you create something is amazing. That's, for me, it gave me the problem solving joy as well as creation, something that I can create. For math, as an undergrad student, I was able to solve problems that exist. And I confess, I wasn't able to solve any open problem. So that ended up pushing me toward computer science. The way that I have approached computer science, and even these days, is really I look at it completely mathematical. I mean, the world is mathematical. That's the way that I look at this. But that's the story from moving from math to computer science. But still, I consider myself a math person.
Nice. That's really cool. I guess I'll kind of follow up by asking, what areas in computer science have you really started to dive into? I know when I was doing some research that you have done a lot with deep learning and machine learning and medical imaging. So maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what you did in your PhD.
Yeah, sure. So one area that I have been always fascinated with, there are a lot of information in the data. And most often when you see and look at something which is huge, high volume, and the scale is not something that's interpretable easily by human, it is really important to digest those data and make sense of it. Biomedical data in general is one of those areas. We have a lot of information about biology, about how our cell works, but sometimes because of the huge amount of data, as well as the complexity of the systems, it's not really easy to, you know, just by looking at data without the raw data, you can't really get that much out of it. So there is need to solve this problem and make sense of the data. Tools that can help you, algorithm and methodology that can help you is really valuable. So machine learning is an approach. Traditional machine learning proved to be useful for a while. And even these days, for some problems, when we really have, we know the important features and characteristic is valuable and we can use it definitely. But a different area really, I think during the last 10 years, I would say, showed a lot of promise. We have some data sources that are not structured. By not structured, I mean things like text, things like images, things like video. These are different from tabular data that we knew, okay, this is a variable X, variable Y, and we know these are important. We face with problems that we don't know which variable is important in general. And sometimes looking at single variables does not help, because if you just go with a small image and look at each one image that we can look at, it's really on our devices, is a sort of matrix of intensity values. And this matrix for a 1000 by 1000 picture, which is a regular, almost low resolution really these days image, you have 1 million variable. You can't really work with them. So you need to digest this, extract features from these. But first of all, what do you mean by feature when you look at the image? And what is the optimal feature? There was a lot of research to find which feature is the most important. And there has been maybe 20, 30 years of work on these. However, these features might not be something which is good for one application, might not be for a different one. So we came up with this desire to really find optimal features for each specific application only based on data. And deep learning started to give us this opportunity. Right now, we can learn those features, and machine learning has been really going to a different dimension by success of deep learning. As I mentioned, I have been fascinated with working on biomedical data, and medical imaging more specifically is an area that has a lot of promise and a lot of application for improving the quality of life and healthcare system in general. So some of my recent work more specifically has been focused on understanding different characteristics of medical imaging using deep learning.
That's super interesting. I just want to take a step back just for our listeners who may not know what you're talking about or, you know, understand it on a base level. What is machine learning? What is the early methods of machine learning that you were mentioning, and where are we now?
Yeah, that's a great question. When we talk about machine learning, we have two components, machine and learning. And first, let's go with learning component. In machine learning, we want to learn from data, from experience. In general, we say we learn something when we experience something, and based on that experience, we change our attitude or action in the future, because we call this learning. When we talk about machine learning, it's really, if I want to define it as something, all the methodologies that help us to gain, to learn from data, improve our performance based on the observed examples and observed data, we can refer them as machine learning. So machine learning, of course, there are many methodologies for machine learning. I want to separate machine learning from deep learning, and I would say why this separation is important at this point. We had a lot of algorithmic and mathematical approach to really try to learn a function or a model. By a model, I mean a mathematical function that get an input and give you an output. This output might be different prediction. For example, what is the chance for this tumor to be benign or malignant, for example? That would be one prediction. So now that we want to build this mathematical function, there are a lot of different functions that might be valuable. Starting from simple functions like linear functions that they had really designed based on linear relationship, we started with linear function, but many functions, many really patterns in real life, they are not linear. They are more complex. And then because to answer this need, more and more complex models were used to learn from data and built a model that's really imitated the knowledge of human experts. However, at some point, two things happened. First of all, we had a huge amount of data, in the past, it wasn't possible. And the other thing is the advent of a GPU machine, which gave us this graphical processing unit, gave us the opportunity to do fast computation and fast matrix computation in general. These two led to something that we these days we call deep learning or deep neural networks. I would like to highlight that neural network has been around for many years and many decades, in fact. But the component that something that make it possible for us to build deep learning, which the word deep comes from the way that we build these networks. You can look at a network as a stack of different layer. And to build a deep network, you need to stack a large number of these layers to build a network. And by increasing this number of layers, you are able to represent more complex pattern. You can go way beyond linear functions. And beside these, of course, there was algorithmic innovations that make, solve some problems that only deep models had. So these lead to a big, revolution in artificial intelligence and machine learning. And this is why these days we see deep learning and machine learning are really in demand. They are useful across application and across the domain. It is not really limited these days to computer science labs or computer companies. For many different scientific and engineering tasks, we need to really find an optimal solution. And machine learning has shown the potential and really delivered this potential to help us with finding optimal solution. That sometimes this optimal solution decreases cost. Sometimes this optimal solutions help us to save lives. So that's the true value of it, really.
I know that all sounds super incredible. I'm just curious, are there any specific coding languages or different tools that you use in machine learning and deep learning, or just in general in the industry?
So in general, in machine learning, one language that is sort of dominant is Python. And one reason is because of the open source movement. And there are many tools and libraries that are available as open source in Python. And that's pushing the whole community forward. So if I write something, I try to make it available for others to use it. And this is the whole community, research community is continuing this. There are also some frameworks that has been built to make developing and designing deep learning model, for example, or machine learning model easier and more accessible to people with different level of skills. Because sometimes we have people that are not really computer scientists, but they come from different area of even engineering, mathematics, medical side. They want to use this tool for their work. So to facilitate this process, there are many packages. Examples of them are PyTorch, TensorFlow, scikit-learn also for traditional machine learning or conventional machine learning. These are available and make this process of designing and developing machine learning and deep learning solution way faster.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Thank you so much. Just switching over to a little bit of your research with machine learning, we know that you've done research in the context of biomedical imaging, as Kelsey mentioned. How are you applying, the tools you just mentioned, Python, PyTorch, those other libraries to your research? And, what have you kind of found?
Regarding the area, the main focus of my research in general, if I want to really phrase it in one sentence, I like to apply machine learning in domains that we don't have that much of annotated data. And by annotated, I mean, when you want to learn from something, you want to see question and also the answer. And machine learn from, easily learn from these pairs. But the problem is that these answers are not always easy to generate. For example, for a medical imaging, if I want to have this annotation, I need to ask a doctor to sit down, spend some time, and based on this expert knowledge that doctors have, come up with the prediction for based on this image. And this is really expensive because doctors are really, we have a shortage of, for our health system of skills and doctors, as and also they are extremely, I would say they are extremely under pressure of other works. And this make it really difficult to develop larger scale annotated data sets. For some area like regular imaging, we have data set of few million samples. This is not the case in medical data. That's one component. The other component is that sometimes we have some disease or some abnormality that are really, really rare. We should be glad that they are rare. There are some cancer types that, you know, based on my collaborators, when they really combine data for more than 10 years from a few hospitals, they come up with 100 samples. And that's also another challenge that these days machine learning have. If we have a larger scale annotated data set, I would say we are really, really efficient. But that's not the case when we don't have that much of annotation and that much of large data sets. So the main focus of my research is really to be able to learn from a smaller amount of annotation and ideally from smaller data sets. If I show you an image of a species that you haven't seen in your life and say, oh, this is a species X, you don't need much, work to distinguish the same species in a different image. But this is not the case these days from a machine learning model. And that's what I would see as future of machine learning. Future of machine learning won't be learning from millions of images, but being able to learn with few examples as we do as human. So for my research in biomedical side and more specifically these days on medical side, I am interested to use this medical imaging and try to develop models that really can give us, I would say, expert level performance based on the small amount of annotation. That's the direction. And if you wanna summarize my main focus of research, this is what I am really excited about.
Nice, that's all very interesting. I guess I kind of want to add on to this question about like some of the images you look at and the data you get. So when you get these images, maybe could you just explain what type of images are they? Like, are they X-rays, MRI? And do some of them come with like annotations and explanations like you said, or is most of it just kind of a guessing game on your end?
Yeah, definitely. So most of the data that I use these days are volumetric data like CT images and MRI images. Of course, always to train and evaluate these models, we have some expert annotation. But as I mentioned, for example, for a recent data set that I'm working with, I have more than 10,000 volumetric samples. And since it's volumetric, if you want to look at it as a CT, for example, might have 200, 300, let's call it a slice. And by a slice, I mean a 2D sort of image. So in general, if you look at it in 2D version, it's large, but for these 10,000 samples, I cannot really expect doctors to go through them and annotate all of them. We have annotation for a small portion of them, and that annotation is going to be the a starting point for machine to learn and try to capture the end point of interest here for us. There is another kind of data, which is microscopy imaging data. For those data, you can look at it as regular images, but with the difference that instead of our images are usually 1,000 by 1,000, this is the dimension of an image, but for those we have the dimension, which is 100,000 by 100,000. They are high resolution, and that's also make it a little bit challenging. You can click on that image and open it on your machine to see it because of the sheer size of the image. So this means that the regular approach for analyzing those images usually don't work, and you need to develop methodologies that are focused on those high resolution images.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I guess my next question would be, more about like what you do with all this information once you have it. So is your end goal to like help with diagnoses? Like I know you mentioned these various forms of cancer that you're looking at. And maybe you could just, yeah, give us some other examples of what these images are used for.
Yeah, definitely. So my work is really a collaboration between medical experts and people from computer science and AI. So for any project that we do, usually we have collaborators from medical side. Sometimes we are interested in diagnosis, and sometimes we are really interested to see patterns that might be interesting and novel for doctors. So if there is a cluster of anomalies and doctors want to really look at it further to see why that cluster happens, why those anomalies happen, do we need to treat those patients in a different way? But that's one general area. And the other area is that sometimes for some of the for treatment planning, there are tests and exams that are really invasive for example, the doctors need to do, take a look at inside body, extract some, tissue from inside the body close to tumor area. And this more specifically for areas like head and neck, this is really invasive. The other approach that we have is that can we really use imaging like MRI and CT to make that predictions instead of going and apply a highly invasive procedure on patient that sometimes those procedures might not be necessary. So the side effects sometimes is really long lasting and decrease the quality of life for many years. And if we are able to solve some of those, it helps with improving patient quality of life, decreasing number of procedures that is not required, but affect our patient and affect our healthcare system a lot, because no matter which procedure you do, it takes a huge amount of investment, emotional investment from patients, and also a burden for doctors. Doctors, if we can really reduce those unnecessary procedures, this means that our doctor have more time to really help patients that truly need those procedures or those surgeries. So that's another area that we are hoping to use medical imaging, for example, and other modality as well. Sometimes medical imaging give us just one picture of patient health. There are other ways that you can extract information. What is the gene expression status for this patient? Or if we know the susceptibility for a specific patient based on the DNA pattern that the patient has, we can really have a better picture and decide treatment planning, which is more personalized and hopefully better for patients.
Sweet. Yeah. I just want to talk a little bit more specifically about your work in this field. What's something that recently that you've discovered or, found out through machine learning or deep learning about the data you were studying, and what implications does that have for the medical industry, for doctors, for patients, as you just mentioned?
Sure. So I can focus on a few examples. So one thing they like to highlight is on the methodology side. Deep learning models have are complex structures. They give us a lot of power, but at the same time, because of this high complexity and high capacity, they can sometimes, if you do not train them well, they might pick up things that are not really what they should learn. For example, in a recent study, we show that sometimes some research group, for example, have used data from different, different hospital. One specific example they want to highlight is that it was a COVID study that they had healthy COVID and pneumonia, but the pneumonia samples came from a different hospital, and it turned out to be is from a children's hospital. So really this model, and of course researchers show that the model works really well, the model can easily distinguish pneumonia from healthy from COVID samples. with a really high performance. What we realized and we showed that actually the model based on the high capacity and high complexity learn to first of all find if this image comes from a children or adults. All of the children, since they were pneumonia and came from the different hospital, the model easily picked that as pneumonia, but not because of pneumonia, in fact, because it's all, this is a children, it should be pneumonia. So these things are, and in general, reproducibility and generalizability of machine learning model is one of my interests. And that's something that's, the result of that work, this is one example of it, will be available soon. And so hopefully that will help people developing better model that truly solve the problem, not use this concept that you call batch effect to come up with a example. The other, a couple of more things that I can say. One thing that we had, one study we did about the post-operative, when you have a surgery or any operation in general, you have side effect and how your body reacts sometimes is important. And one study we did, one thing that I always believed in life, that age is a number. So the side effect is really, it's not a factor of, many of them, it's not a factor of your age as a number, but as in general, as how healthy you are, or let me phrase it in this way, your physiological age, which is interesting in a way that highlights no matter in which stage of your life you are, you need to focus on living healthy, being healthy, because really that makes you stronger against different things that the world throw at you. So that's another component that I would like to mention. Another study that is, we challenge in fact also to see if we can use simulated data, and based on the simulated data, learn with a smaller sample size. And that proves really, really effective. And right now we are in fact using that approach to solve this issue of lack of large annotated data sets.
Sweet, yeah, that sounds incredible. Thank you so much for sharing those examples with us. I just want to hop into the present now. You mentioned earlier that yourself, you are new to UCalgary. What kind of research are you going to be doing here? And what are some classes you might be teaching, and how are students interacting with you?
Yeah, definitely. I am really excited to, really something that I have had in mind, and hopefully will be, I'm working with the different faculty member and in general department as well, to build a sort of AI research hub, which serve as a hub for not only for improving student experience in AI, but also as a opportunity to provide expertise and share this talents with other area, not only computer science, for example, medical side and engineering as well. So that's something I'm really interested. The other things that I'm planning to do is to, one thing that we have right now, machine learning and AI are really introduced to a student really, really late in their study, in third year and fourth year. So because of that, they don't have really much opportunity to go and have more courses and experience more. The future of computer science, you can't really be a strong, but without any knowledge in machine learning. I don't want to say computer science and machine learning. Of course, we have other great area in that's in computer science as well. But machine learning is something that right now I see a lot of demand, and or students, even before graduation, they find a job. Actually, they don't need to find a job. They most often, if they are on LinkedIn, recruiter approach them. And this process is a common approach. So providing this a skill for a student to improve their future career and increase their success is something I'm really excited about. And hopefully I'll be planning to make AI more accessible to students in earlier in their study. Among the courses that I would be teaching, it would be one deep learning course. This course, one pattern that I have seen is that most often courses that are designed and delivered is either completely mathematical and cumbersome for a student. That's after going through that experience, students try to stay away from machine learning. That's one pattern that I have seen. The other pattern is that students go through a course which is really does not provide them the concrete reason if they do something, why they do it. And that also is not a good approach, because at the end of the day, a student working on different projects, different companies, they need to know which tool they should use and why they should use that. So that's important. So the course that I'm designing would be to bring this perspective together and be a fun and interesting course that really adds value to the success of our students.
Great. That's super interesting that you're going to have more opportunities for these students to get introduced to machine learning and some of these other concepts earlier on. I think that's great. I guess my last and final question would be, if students are interested in your work or want to reach out to you, how can they contact you? And maybe do you have any advice for someone who might be interested in getting into machine learning?
Yeah, definitely. I'll be on the department's homepage for computer science. Also, you can reach out to me through my email address. I can share my email address with you. Usually, I try to get back to students as soon as possible. For a student, my message for a student that might be interested in doing research in AI and work and learn is that look at it as a problem solving. It's another tool in your toolbox, but with much more potential and much more capability. No matter what is your experience and what is your interest, there is a good chance that you find deep learning or machine learning as a tool that is helpful and useful for you. My suggestion is for a student is before starting your journey for machine learning, you need to really have two things. One, maybe a first year course in math, like calculus first. So that's one component that would be really helpful. And the other one is to be able to really program. So after that, there is nothing to prevent you to start from your journey. My suggestion is that find a project that you are passionate about. This project could be something in medical side, it could be something working, finding an object in image processing, satellite images, whatever it is. It doesn't need to be image. I just came up with a few application images. Of course, the application for machine learning is not limited. You might want to really process text or process a video or even tabular data. There are a lot of problems. Find your problem and don't be afraid of the name. Don't be afraid of the the fact that sometimes these courses are offered late third year or fourth year. To me, a first year student, after having, as I mentioned, an elementary course in, let's say, Python and calculus, you should be able to start your journey. You learn by doing. That's the best way to learn. And of course, we try to really make this opportunity more available to students, hopefully through different workshops that will be open to students. And one thing that we are going to do through this AI research hub really is to bring experts to have workshops that are hands-on and provide the skill that a student can really approach it, see it, to break this barrier for that's, you know, sometimes take things like machine learning for some people might be frightening. we want to break that barrier and make it more accessible. And I'm sure, and I have seen during my work, for example, at McGill, we had undergrad students that they did really, really good job in building models that are really valuable and with a lot of potential. And in some cases, even they were published in high impact factor journals. So just start doing it. That's my advice in general.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely great advice. It's never too early to start. So I guess Chris and I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure having you, Farhad, and getting to learn a bit about your research and your background. And welcome to UCalgary.
Thanks for having me. And it was a pleasure to talk to you and share some of this information with our audience.
Hey, listener. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the What the Tech podcast. Thanks again to Farhad for being our guest. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at @UofC_CPSC and leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great day.